The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 259. I hope all is well with you, and I thank you for checking out this episode. And I'd just like to address the elephant in the room, so to speak. I realized, much to my horror, this past Monday, when the live broadcast of the PVD Cast through the Facebook page. When it aired, I realized that in the episode featuring my conversation with Nikita Breznikov, that there was a small error that I forgot to edit out of the outro. I'm a little bit embarrassed, but you know what? The way I look at it, I had a heck of a streak of not having any flubs or mistakes or anything, so I was due for one. I don't know, I just feel a little bit weird and awkward because I like to run a tight ship. I like to have professionalism here at the PVD Cast. So, yeah, if you heard it, guilty as charged. All right. I did fix it, by the way. So some of you probably are like, I don't even know what you're talking about, John. Well, that's because I got into Libsyn and PVDcast.com and fixed it. But nonetheless, that's last week. Let's talk about this week's episode. And I have two Texas residents. I like to call them the Texas Tandem, if you will, who are coming on to talk about their projects. The first, Tina Marie Trimpert. She is the host of the Psychedelic Pod. That's Psyche-Delic Pod, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about human consciousness, human emotions, mental health issues, philosophy, etc. And Tina is also one of the people that are putting together the Indie Pods Unite Summit, which will be happening the end of November, the 29th through December 3rd. So we're going to talk about both of those items and a whole lot more. And then I will follow things up with my conversation with director and actor and writer Bill Foster. He is currently putting together a great full-length feature Western called Showdown on the Brazos. And we also talk about a lot of other things when it comes to filmmaking. So Tina and Bill, two fantastic guests. So let me get this quick little ad in for my great sponsor, and then we'll get to hearing my conversations with Tina and Bill. And of course, when I'm talking about a great sponsor, I'm referring to none other than World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every era, as well as graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, back issues, just basically anything you need for your fandom, they got it. So stop on over to the store and say hi to Jeff and the fine folks at World's Greatest, or check them out online at wgcomics.com, or they're even on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And ladies and gentlemen, with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Tina and Bill talking about podcasting and filmmaking. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the PVD Cast. I am sitting down with a fellow podcaster, Tina Marie Trimpert. How are you doing?
Hello, John. It's so good to be talking to you. I've kind of dived into your podcast a little bit, and you have a lot of stuff there. Wow, I'm doing amazing. I mean, I'm always amazing, you know. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing good. You know, first of all, thank you for the compliment about the PVD Cast. I appreciate that. And it seems that we've talked multiple times in one of the conference calls with Steve Joyner. And so it was so nice to actually just sit down and have like a one-on-one and not be in one of those giant conference calls, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's very nice to actually talk. It's always nice to talk one-on-one to somebody. You can actually not have to focus on what everybody else is saying, because sometimes it's hard to interject, even in real life, when there's multiple other people talking. So yes, one-on-one conversations are the best, and podcasting is amazing for that. I think it's opened up a whole different realm and a whole new reality, because podcasting is the future of broadcasting.
Why do you think that? Can I ask what's your take on that is the future of broadcasting?
You know, I've seen a lot of different ads, a lot of news stations streaming on YouTube going live. They're moving over to places like YouTube, and a lot of podcasters streaming to YouTube as well. Radio station owning friends of mine have actually moved to podcasting. So just based on that information, I believe that that's a fact. We're just moving forward with a lot of different things. And it's a great way, just like social media kind of became a news outlet for everybody, that podcasting is how you can not only make friends when you're in the podcasting world, but as a listener, it feels more comfortable, if you know what I'm saying.
No, I understand what you're saying. Indeed. I actually will say that I had a conversation recently with somebody, a fellow podcaster, who feels like we're still in an infancy when it comes to podcasting, that even though it's been around, and it's been around now, I don't know, a long time, we'll say. But we're still in the infancy, because there's still some people out in the general public that still don't get it. Like, they don't get what a podcast is. They don't know where to find one. So do you think we're still in that infancy stage, or do you think we've gotten to, you know, a different level with podcasting?
I think that even earlier this year, we, in my opinion, were sort of in an infancy stage, but it's moved so much. There are like memes all over the internet about podcasting and how everybody wants to start a podcast now. And it's true. I have had so many friends come to me like, hey, I really want to start a podcast. And it's not the same as just doing live video. There's a lot of effort that goes into podcasting. There's so many hours that you spend editing. Like I said, my husband, well, prior to the actual conversation here, we talked about how my husband does the audio engineering and stuff. And he sometimes spends 10 to 12 hours on an episode perfecting it. So, and researching certain topics if you're a topical type of discussion, or writing up a script if you're a serial podcast. Is that the proper terminology? Because that sounded weird.
I think that's what they're called. I'm not sure. I think they're serials. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then, well, fictional podcasting, you know, making stories up and stuff, which I think those are really cool.
So how did you get started in podcasting?
How I got started is a really funny story. I am a voiceover actress and a non-voiceover actress as well. I was SAG affiliated for a very long time, had a baby, got married, did all that stuff. And then I was like, I think I'm going to start a blog. It's as simple as that. And people were like, blog? And I said, yeah, a blog. And they're like, podcasting. And I was like, oh, well, hey, that's a thought. So the next day, my husband and I were driving to Austin, Texas to visit my little sister. And I was writing in my notebook furiously about like 100 or 200 ideas I had for different topics for this podcast I didn't tell him about yet. And then he asked me what I was doing. And I was like, we're going to start a podcast. And he was like, that's dumb. Like, what are you talking about? Because we both didn't really know too much about it. I may have heard some, but not really. I didn't get into it until I really started researching it and understanding it, because I had a lot of other things going on. I've been in the entertainment industry prior to everything I just talked about for a very long time, since I was 17. And I decided this is a good way to still be entertaining, but also we can delve into different aspects of life and have conversations with people. And we did it.
How long have you been doing it?
Guess.
I remember you saying actually in one of those conference calls, but I can't remember now for the life of me. I'm going to say, can I do a ballpark of like less than 2 years?
So yes, it is less than 2 years. End of June of this year.
Well, that's awesome that you've been podcasting for such a short time, because you've had quite a few episodes out. And let's talk about the podcast. It's called the Psychedelic Podcast, correct?
Wow, you're like one of the first people to say that properly. Thank you. Yes,
no,
we are
problem.
The Psyche. I say Psyche hyphen Delic Podcast because people will end up typing the Psychedelic Podcast all the time. Yes.
So can you describe real quickly what an episode or what some of the episodes are about within your podcast?
Yeah, we've covered a lot of psychological topics. We've covered different lesser known topics like lucid dreaming and astral projection, gotten various authors on the program prior to meeting Steve, which thank you, Steve Joyner, for this connection, all the others, and have incorporated all kinds of, I mean, we always incorporate delving into the human mind as a part of our show because, and I call ourselves a panel of non-experts because we are learning information as we go along based on whoever's there with us. Sometimes it's just my husband and I. Sometimes it's a full panel of people, which generally is about four people. And we talk about things and pick it apart, and we can still be friends right after it. So it's really cool. I've learned so much, and I've always been interested in psychology and why people think the way they do and philosophy. And that's all philosophical, to be understanding things from a different point of view.
Well, I'm going to throw it out there, and please educate me if I'm off base. Because I know for me personally, I feel like mental health issues are a topic that obviously they're very serious, and I feel like they get swept under the carpet, even in 2020.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So do you focus on some of those as well as some of the other maybe more, I don't know.
Obscure.
Obscure. There you go. Thank you. I was looking for a word there. I just blanked out. Obscure types of topics. Like, do you cover all types of bases about the human mind?
Yes, we had an incredible three-part series on narcissism. Actually, it wasn't so much about narcissism. It was about narcissistic personality disorder, which is not the same as narcissism. I was always that person that was interested in psychology at a very young age. So in my free time, I like to study about it. I'm not a psychologist or anything, but I'm interested in it. And we've talked about psychopathy, sociopathy, schizophrenia. On Halloween, not on Halloween, but during the week of Halloween, Robert and I, which that's my husband's name, we kind of picked apart what they call the scariest mental illnesses of all time. But I'm really particular about not hurting anybody's feelings. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm really open to understanding people's mental health issues. And I don't think it's a joke. I just want to fully understand it. So getting other people's perspectives on everything is super important to me because, like you said, mental health is a very important topic that does get swept under the rug.
Yeah. And, I listened to several episodes, but the one that I found the most fascinating was the one that you folks did with using different types of psychedelics to help with mental health issues. Because I guess I never really, I guess I just got pulled into it because you hear the word, like psychedelics or hallucinogens, you think a bunch of hippies hanging out in a van, wanting to get high, not really think about how it could be applicable to helping people that have certain mental illnesses.
Right. Was it to weed or not to weed?
No, that was not that one. I remember seeing that one in the queue.
That was great. I think you might be talking about one that we did with a guy named Antonio DeCunto. He has he has a show called Finding the God Spark. He talks all about his trauma and how it has helped him. Yes. That's a...
Yes.
Very interesting getting his perspective on LSD and what he calls macrodosing. Yeah. So we have talked a little bit about that. We haven't really gone into psychedelics per se besides that, from what, to my knowledge, I'm sure it's been dropped a couple times in different episodes because, for example, the scariest mental illnesses one, there's something called the Alice in Wonderland syndrome I learned about. Well, Rob and I learned about, and it's where you see things bigger or smaller or hear things very quiet or very loud, which is kind of like having a hallucinogenic trip. And I thought that was really interesting. So, like, not that I've done these types of things, but that's why a lot of people get our name. They misunderstand the name of our podcast. I had to put this hyphen there because the Psychedelic Podcast is really a play on words for the human mind, like delving into that part, the human psyche.
What do you think is the most rewarding part of doing your podcast?
I just love, like I said, talking to people and putting out information that people don't really know, giving them new viewpoints on different topics, and doing it with my husband and my friends, and meeting the people that Steve sends us. Very interesting to get into their heads and understand or take apart, even if I don't say it out loud sometimes, why people think the way they do or why they do certain things. Just last night, we watched something on Netflix that had to do with serial killers and understanding a serial killer's mind. And I thought that was super interesting. So that's pretty much what I find rewarding, as well as learning new things from other people. That's super important to me. And it's such a connection that you get from podcasting, like different than what we have in real life these days. I feel like it's way more genuine.
Okay. I totally would agree with you on that. I think that one of the benefits for me was meeting, as you said, a whole host of new people.
Yeah. And you have a lot of stuff about wrestling, which I really loved watching when I was in the Philippines. My cousin started getting me involved in that. And as you know, Christian Batista, he's a half Filipino and I'm half Filipina as well. So I was a big Batista fan back in the day and an Undertaker fan. I did really enjoy wrestling, and I kind of stopped, you know, when I moved back to the States, because I found my own things that I was interested in. But I think it's cool that people can get on a platform and say what they feel about whatever and talk about things and pick that all apart too. Because in its own way, what you're doing is also philosophical to an extent.
Yeah, most definitely. I would agree with that. Yeah, most definitely. Well, we all have them. Every podcaster has a dream guest. Tina, who would be your dream guest if you could book anyone at all?
That's very, very difficult question you threw at me. Let's see. Dream guest. Is it a celebrity? Can it be someone that's a past or...
Ooh, go. You're turning the tables on me. I didn't think about somebody that had passed on. Sure, it could be, let's go that route. It could be anybody at all of any different walk of life, alive or dead.
Freddie Mercury. He was just amazing. He had 18 albums, right? Number one albums.
And yeah.
Who doesn't sing Bohemian Rhapsody? And also, I just love everything British, because you know
everything British, okay?
Yeah, I mean, there's not really a dream guest for me per se. I love everybody's perspectives on everything. I love hearing everybody's stories. That's just somebody that I really have listened to my whole life. That I, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody gets stuck in my head all the time. And that's pretty, it's kind of basic for me to say. But rest in peace, Freddie Mercury, like, because that was everything he did, like with all of his Grammys and everything, just super cool. We actually talk about it in our Mandela Effect episode. Do you know about that?
Oh, yeah. I'm aware of the Mandela Effect. Yeah.
Okay. Which Mandela Effect can you describe to me right now.
You put me on the spot. I've heard of it. I'm not sure if I can remember the examples that I had that were explained to me years ago. Isn't it the idea? It's kind of a little bit like deja vu, correct?
Sort of like a parallel universe.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a combination of that. Yeah. So apparently for We Are the Champions, you know, that mm-hmm. song, half of the people that you might talk to will remember him singing Of the World at the end, and the other half don't remember that at all and say that's not how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
That's one of them. So I think that's really interesting. I want to ask, and that's kind of why I said Freddie Mercury. I want to ask him, like, hey, so do you do this at the end or not? That's how I remember it, is that you do go Of the World at the end.
Well, let's talk about a something that's coming up here real soon. It's the Indie Pods Unite Summit. So could you explain to the listeners, you know, what this summit's going to be all about, how folks can check it out and whatnot?
Okay, so the Indie Pods United Summit is really about podcasters networking and connecting. We've got a lot of great speakers talking about how to monetize your podcast, how to market your podcast properly, what kind of audio equipment you need, giving you uplifting learning devices for people that want to get into it. Because as I said before, I think that podcasting really is the future of broadcasting. And also, we have people like Luke Null, who's appeared on SNL, and Chris Harvey, who's been on Stars and Hulu and other platforms. Really cool artist called Doc Brass. Several other indie bands and musicians involved as well, to mix things up a little bit while also spotlighting the podcasters in the indie podcasting world that work so hard to get their content out there. And there's so many different genres of it. And it's been a difficult but fun endeavor. I do have a few people that are working with me on it, and they all have different strengths. And it's been a joy putting it together, but also very hard, guys. I also did event and wedding planning for quite a while during my acting and modeling career, and it is stressful in real life, but let me tell you, putting together something virtually like this is even more hard when you don't have the people right in front of your face to talk to. But we want you there at it's Indie Pods United. It's only $10 to see all of these amazing acts, and you get unlimited access to it.
So what was the catalyst for doing this?
I just wanted to put something together where it wasn't revolving around myself, like I've seen in a lot of other summits trying to get to this point. I believe the side note, I believe we just got mentioned in Pod News. I could pull that up, but I had to turn my Wi-Fi off of my phone because I live in the middle of nowhere. So we're right up there with right now things like Podcast Movement on this really cool website. I think it is Pod News, but I'll have to get back to you on that. I'll post about it tomorrow in Indie Pods United group.
There you go. There you go. if you don't mind, let's just talk about a couple list of questions where kind of like where you pick between two things. All right. And just okay. Kind of go that way. All right. So just, these are just general questions that sometimes I like to pull out. So Tina, coffee or tea?
Toffee.
Well done. Well done. Oh, I like that. Well done. Okay.
Thank you.
Sports or the movies?
The movies.
Okay.
So I did play a lot. I played a lot of sports in high school, though. I played golf, volleyball, basketball, and I cheered. Weird combination.
Okay. Huh. Okay. Was that in, are you originally from Texas?
No, I told Don Smith on the Life Radio show about this, and I told him it was very well rehearsed, because I've been telling everyone that ever asks me what I am or where I'm from this exact response. Born in Japan, raised mostly in Korea, but I'm Filipino Norwegian, and I've lived in Japan, Korea, Texas, the Philippines, Germany, England, France, North Dakota, Montana, North Carolina, and I'm back in Texas.
Your passport must have lots of stamps in it.
Yes, but I had to get renewed when I turned 18. For the listeners out there, I'm not close to 18. So, because that sounded kind of weird.
All right, so you're going to go movies, not sports.
I'm going to have to. I love the movies. And I love that people are taking what's happening in the world and putting up drive-in theaters. I love drive-in theaters. I think it's so cool. When I lived in Montana, they had a drive-in theater. They didn't really have a movie theater in that area where I lived. I went to a high school for 1 year where there were 4 kids that would have been in my graduating class had I stayed there.
Wow.
So drive-in theaters were a thing even 10 years ago when I wasn't in high school.
You know, the funny thing you mentioned that, me and some friends rented a theater for a showing. And that was really cool. And it was really, in July, still when COVID was still a little bit, you know, skyrocketing a little bit. We rented a theater. It was just the 8 of us, the 10 of us, however many there were. And we could space ourselves out, and it was really fun. And it was incredibly cheap. It was only like $150.
What? That is so cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you had asked me, like, how much does it take? It's like $400 to rent a theater. I'm sure of it. Like, nope.
Right.
On the weekends, it was $150.
So you got the whole theater, like not just the room, but the whole theater, like, you know, because it could go 1 to 12. You didn't get just the 6, you got like the entire building?
Yeah. Now they did put, it was at the theater, the multiplex that we were at, they did have these in the smaller auditoriums. So it wasn't the like, you know, the gigantic high res type of, it was in the smaller ones, but still I was like, that's cool. I can actually enjoy a movie out in public and still feel safe.
Wow. Yeah, that's super cool. My friend that just made it into the Austin Revolution Film Festival, which is supposed to be being held in 2021 for Galatea. Her name is Jess Paul. And I made a joke to her the other day about how we should all get masks with Velcro so that we can eat popcorn as we watch the film get featured. But then I was like, wait a minute, that's going to disturb everybody in the audience. Just a bunch of people opening Velcro pieces.
Yes,
can you imagine?
That would be slightly irritating. I would probably lose my cool on that. I won't lie.
Me too.
Favorite vacation spot?
Oh, you didn't give me 2 choices, so I'll go with
I'm going to deviate from the 2 choices. Favorite vacation spot? Since you mentioned you've been all around the world, and it's really not on my list of questions. It just popped in my head. You've been around the world and visited a lot of places. Do you have a favorite vacation spot?
Boracay, Philippines. Okay, Boracay is the most beautiful place that I can think of when it comes to islands. It's not because I'm biased, because I'm half. It's just because I have walked into that water 2.5 feet, looked down, and I can see my toes. It's this piece of the ocean that's untouched by the pollution. And so it's so clear, and the sand is so white, and the people are so nice, and you can just eat with the people that live on this island, and they're just so down to earth and loving to whoever comes there. Even if you don't speak their language, the Philippines in general as a whole entire culture is really like that. Very welcoming to all cultures that aren't their own, and also to their own, which is why I'm, you know, proud to be a half Filipino myself. And not only that, but Britney Spears does sing about Boracay in one of her songs.
What song is that?
Oh, she says something about, or go off to Boracay. And I can't remember what song it is, but it came out like 14 years ago. So I can Google it right now.
Yeah, we do have the technology. All right. Final choice here, since I deviated a little bit with the vacation spot because it popped in my head. Science fiction novels or Westerns?
Western novels?
Yeah.
Whoa, I didn't even know that was a thing. I love sci-fi.
Okay, so you're going with sci-fi. Okay.
I'm gonna have to go with sci-fi. Yeah, definitely. I love... Okay, 1984 is one of my favorite books. Considering our considering us being in 2020 and everybody talking about like Orwellian themed things, and that's kind of what it feels like, doesn't it?
Yes.
It's ironic, but I've always liked things like that and A Brave New World. And I was, there's a trilogy of books that I read just a couple of years ago that I really can't remember, and I wish I could, but it is sci-fi for sure. I love sci-fi movies. I love sci-fi everything, really.
Okay, how about Star Wars or Star Trek?
The only reason I'm going to have to say Star Trek is because that's something my dad and I really bonded with.
Okay.
When I was a child. Yes, so Star Trek.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get up to talking about social media, websites, plugging one more time the summit, final question, who has had the biggest influence on your life?
My mom.
Okay.
Yes, she's just like the sweetest, loudest person that you'll ever meet. And she's just bubbly and happy all the time. Even when she yells, it's a happy yell.
Oh. So, honestly, I don't know. Like, I'll be honest. I'm jealous, Tina, because that's not a happy yell when my mom would yell. That was, you better run. You better run, John. You better run fast.
Run for the hills. Yeah. There were times that it wasn't a happy yell, like, Tina, do your homework. And her Filipino accent, it was so cute. And I'd just be like, you're so cute. And she can't stay mad at me forever. Like, we'll end up being cool again. My mom is my homie.
There you go. All right. Well, let's let folks know where they can get in touch with you, social media, websites. Do you have any upcoming episodes that you'd like to plug real quick?
We just dropped an episode between one of our panel members who's about to burst with her baby in the next week or two. So that's probably going to be the last time, unfortunately, everybody's going to be hearing from her in a while. And it's a really great interview. I've actually been on the author who wrote The Mosaic. His name is Daniel Levin. I've been on his show. Dawn has as well. And he came on, talked to her. They talked about just humanity as a whole and how everybody should be more loving. And it's just really a really good conversation. As well as we are going to be doing a Cults 2. And also, I've got an interview with Shanann Wilson, who I know you spoke to with Liz Priestley. I love Liz. I'm sure I'll love Shanann as well. And that's coming up. It'll be a live stream. You can find it on YouTube. Just go to youtube.com/thepsyche-delic podcast. Type it in or type it into your URL, search bar, whatever. And I'm on Instagram as @AsianRanchSauce. And on Facebook as facebook.com/TinaMarieTrimpert, where I do a lot of my live streams.
Excellent.
Same with Laura Meadows. Oh my gosh, that was so much fun. I loved Laura.
Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. Was it a Halloween themed episode?
Completely. She did like 4 or 5 different monologues, and she even screams at one point. And as you know, she's known as a scream queen. So when she screamed, my ears rang and I was like, wow, I don't know how anyone can make such a high-pitched noise.
Wow. Okay. So let's refresh people real quick one more time about the IndiePods United Summit. When is it happening? Where can folks get more information and whatnot?
Okay. It's on Eventbrite right now, but you can find us by looking in Facebook groups for IndiePods United, just like that. Not the page, but the group, and it's pinned to the top. There are ads running for it, so you may see it on your newsfeed, but also you can find it at indiepodsunited.com. I also forgot to mention the most important thing about how to find our podcast, which is just go to thepsyche-delicpodcast.com as well. So IndiePods United is from November 29th to December 3rd, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Central. You're going to be a part of it. We're so excited to have you. You're going on at 10:30 a.m. on, I believe it was the 1st, right?
November 30th.
November 30th. So you're going to be...
unless you switched it on me and didn't tell. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, not during this conversation. My mind can't go in that many directions. It's already did that during the conversation.
Okay.
We're happy to have you. And about 101 different events happening during that 5-day period for $10. And we will be streaming to Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, and to that website. So it looks like a landing page, but it's a cute one, indiepodsunited.com. And also, I personally want to thank Steve Joyner again for all of the amazing connections, including you, John. So I'm happy to have had this conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I would like to say real quickly, thank you again for the opportunity to be part of the summit. And I just said it the other day in a private conversation with somebody. I go, Steve Joyner is just the best. And that's all I can say. That's the best way to kind of express myself when it comes to Steve, because you're absolutely correct. He's allowed all of us to kind of have some cool connections and talk to some really awesome people as well.
Yes. Go to s-j-network.com if you're a celebrity listening to the PVD cast right now and you want to get on Steve's network, hit him up.
There you go. Well, Tina, it's been a blast. I really did appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule tonight to sit down and chat with me. So thanks again.
Yes, thank you. And I have one final question for you, though it wasn't me really asking. Okay, you've got hockey pucks. So I know you like hockey. What is your logo? I want to fully understand it.
Oh, yeah, sure. I love talking about my logo because a very good friend of mine created it for me when I started doing this podcast. Since I love comic books, I love movies, I love wrestling, and I love hockey, I sat down with Anthony and I'm like, hey man, look, I don't have any real ideas, but here's what I'm going to pitch at you. Those are the four things that I love. You know that. I said, I don't know. I was just thinking about maybe a family crest or something. And he's like, done. And that's about three days later, he sent that over as a roughed out. And I'm like, dude, that is amazing. And he's like, you like it? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I'll color it in, because he was a graphic designer. And, I say it all the time. Anthony, I appreciate it so much, man. It's been 7 years and it still looks as awesome as it did on day one.
Wow, that I see it now. Yeah, I see that pal as that comic book thing. Okay, because I was like, okay, I know you like wrestling and I know that you're sponsored by the comic company that
World's Greatest Comics.
Yeah, World's Greatest Comics. And I understood hockey, but like the family crest, I didn't know. Wow, that's a really cool logo. I definitely love it. And I love Archie Comics. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Cool. Well, again, Tina, thank you so very much for coming on. And folks, don't go anywhere. I'll be back to talk to you real soon. Before I move on to my next conversation, I need to talk to you just for one moment about World's Greatest Comics. They're a great sponsor of the PVD cast, and they're also your one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, back issues, posters. They got it all for your comic book fandom. And if you don't want to miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pull system, and every time that comic comes in, they'll hold one for you. So check them out online at wgcomics.com or jump on over to the store. It's located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can even find them on Facebook. Just search for @WGComics. And no matter how you interact with the fine folks over there at World's Greatest, let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, on the PVD cast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm joined this afternoon by Mr. Bill Foster. He is a writer, an actor, a director. Bill, you're down in Texas. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. Is life treating you all right down there in Texas?
Well, you bet. It's been real pretty last few days and working in our vineyard, trying to get things done before it gets
all right.
Cold.
Well, when does it get a little bit cold down in Texas? I'm gonna be honest. I don't know too much about the weather patterns in Texas, especially central Texas where you're at. So does it get cold?
February is the worst month, believe it or
okay.
not. You know, December's not bad. You'll get some cold weather, but then it usually warms up into the 50s and 60s, you know, for several days. But February is where you have all your ice and snow, and we usually have one or two bad weather days. And the problem here, instead of just getting snow and rocking and rolling, you get rain, which are freezing rain, then you get that layer of ice, and then it snows on top of it. So you just got a Melvahess, you know, for 3 or 4 days. But over and above all that, it's fairly mild wintertime. You know, we'll get down in freezing on a lot of occasions at night, but we're probably average 50s during the day if you went in the whole winter long, average them together.
That's not too bad. That's not too bad. It sure beats the times in Ohio when we're below freezing. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, the problem is we don't have a fall in Texas or a spring. We go straight from summer to winter and then winter to summer. You'll have about a week or two of really beautiful fall, spring weather, and then it turns bitter cold or bitter hot. You know, one of the two. So. The thing about what we say in Texas, if you don't like the weather, wait a few hours and it will change.
Well, Bill, you are the director of a Western called Showdown on the Brazos.
Yes, sir.
Can you give the listeners a quick summary of what the film's about?
You bet. It's the typical Greek formula where you have the hero that does not want to be the hero. And he's called into duty and does not want that responsibility. So the basic story is there's two Texas Rangers. And the Texas Rangers is the old West law enforcement of Texas. And so a lot of history goes into it back then. So one of the Texas Rangers has retired from being a Texas Ranger because this band of certain outlaws led by Nate Jones killed his family. And so he got out of it. And his protege, which he raised from a small child, up to be a Texas Ranger, kept on being a Texas Ranger. Well, the governor commissions both of them back into one commission, and that's to go after Nate Jones. And the one that has retired, that lost his family, decides he will go back into being a Texas Ranger one more time for one last ride because he's not going to take any prisoners. And so he gets a chance to have vigilante and law enforcement all in the same saddle this time. And so they go after Nate Jones in the town of Brazos. And, Nate Jones is a bad, bad outlaw, and, you know, he has a lot of following. And so the whole story is him trying to figure out a way to overthrow Nate. And it ends up in a big gun battle, and that's why it's called Showdown on the Brazos.
Well, the last time that you and I had chatted, you were getting ready to start shooting a bunch of footage. And I think that was probably, I want to say, the middle of September. So how did it go? Did you get everything wrapped up that you needed to get wrapped up?
Finally, yes. We shot a lot in the fall. We came back and did a lot of editing and decided we needed some more scenes. Even though we're cutting the time, you know, we don't want it 3 hours long. But it was our first cutting came out to be an hour and 50 minutes. And so then we sent it to the next round of editors, and we're trying to hit that an hour 30. We felt like there was a few scenes that I had already written that we needed to add in there that we hadn't filmed, and then of some that I needed to write, somehow tying some things together. And so I went back and rewrote those or wrote the scenes. In July, we scheduled 3 weekends in a row. We got 2 of them filmed, and then COVID shut us down until 3 weeks ago. You know, we had everything ready to go, and then boom, COVID hit the second round in Texas and shut us down, and we could not do anything for about nearly six months. I guess it was 4 months total. And we hit the ground running when we got the okay to start filming again and got that weekend knocked out. So it's all in the editor's hands now, which is a great feeling, you know, when you finally – well, it started out really fast. I mean, we were really making good time, and now it's ended up a little over 2 years filming this one feature. But, you know, when you film on weekends and, you know, things like that, it's going to take a while. It's really, I think, turned out very well, what I've seen. We've got a trailer that's going to go to distribution. We've got several distribution companies actually bidding, trying to get the distribution on it. So keep our fingers crossed.
Is it a challenge to kind of have the start-stop type of schedule, if you will? Because I imagine that, you know, consistency, you know, the just making sure that, hey, we got this scene right, or maybe do we have to go back and refilm it? I imagine that's got to be the biggest challenge with the starting and the stopping.
Yes, it is. Yes, and we've already made the agreement, me and the two other partners in my in our production company. We're going to start another one. It's called I Heard the Quail Whistle, hopefully in April. But we're going to plan on 25 filming days in a row, not stopping. We're just talking to investors now and trying to get that money set up, because, you know, we self-funded the first show down in Brazos just to be able to show people what we can do, because if we can't invest in ourselves, why would they invest in us? And so we went about it that approach, and so now we can show them what we can do, and we're going to we're in fact, we started talking to investors already, but our plan is to shoot 25 straight days, if not 30 or maybe shorter, depending on how it goes. And, you know, when you say that, that's filming Monday through Friday, then the actors get off Saturday and Sunday. But the producers, directors, and everybody else, they keep on working Saturday and Sunday. So that's going to be about a 30, 35 day without a break work week, I guess you say. Work one long week, about 30 days.
That is the longest week that I've ever heard of for a work week. That is correct, Bill.
Yeah. And you're talking, you know, the actors have put in 12 hours a day, and directors and everybody else, they'll put in 14, 16 hours a day. And so it is a very long day, but it passes by very fast. It's amazing how fast it does pass by.
Well, let's talk about some of the characters and some of the actors that you have cast. You yourself, you play the role of Captain.
Yes, sir.
Who also goes by the name Elliot as well. Is that correct?
Right. Elliot is his undercover name. He goes into Brazos undercover, so that way they don't realize he's a Texas Ranger. And so he looks at they ask him, what's your name? And he looks at a bottle of whiskey, and it's Elliot Whiskey. And he says, you can just call me Elliot. My character is very stern, not a lot of jokes, not a lot of fun in his life, because, you know, he lost his wife and two daughters. Just became a recluse and secluded because he felt like it was his fault, because he was a Texas Ranger, that they got killed. And so he has sentenced himself to a life of hard labor by himself. His partner, Texas Rangers, is played by Larry Welch. His character's name's Samuel. He's the happy-go-lucky. In fact, I've told him several times when I wrote this story, I like his character better than mine, but I knew I could play mine better than I could play the other one. And so he's the one that's always cracking jokes, chasing the women, drinking lots of whiskey, you know, just the good old boy that enjoys life and enjoys being a Texas Ranger. But he knows when it's time to get serious too. The bad guy, Nate Jones, is a really great actor by the name of Brent Rock. And Brent does an amazing job to make you hate him. You know, Walt Disney says your good guy is only as good as your bad guy is bad. And so we really made Brent bad. And in this last round of filming, he came in and said, man, you must not like me very well. That's like, well, that's the whole plan. And then Jeff Davis, who you see him in a lot on TV shows, Law and Order and The Mentalist and things of that nature. He plays the preacher in our movie. And he's the one that actually sends a letter to the governor for help. We were actually allowed to film in the state capital of Texas, and so we're going to be able to use some of that footage. You know, you may film 8 hours and only get, you know, a minute or two of footage that you use, which a lot of people don't understand. Even in the movie business, some of the actors don't, you know, extras don't understand that. You know, they think they're going to be on there a lot. Hey, we filmed 8 hours, we're going to really be seen a lot. You might be on there 30 seconds or 5 minutes, you know. So it's amazing, that part of it. Those are the main characters in the whole movie, those four, and, you know, and everything kind of revolves around them. There's a drunk sheriff in the cast that he is played by Dennis Allen, does a really good job of being a drunk. My grandson actually plays one of the students in the local school that stands up to Nate Jones, Heston Lee. We asked him, said, what's a good character name for him? He said Weston. And then he started signing his papers at school, Weston. And his teacher called his mother, said, who is Weston Lee? She goes, oh, my goodness, that's his movie character. I'll have a talk with him. So so he took it real serious. See, school teacher is played by C.J. Morrison, a really great actress. So we've got a lot of people that in this movie that just needs a break. You know, they're really good, doing a lot of acting around Houston, Austin area that just have not been seen yet. And hopefully this movie will be big enough where it'll give them a big break and they can get out and further their career. A lot of them I'm going to use in my next movie. I try not to forget anybody, so I tell them. May not be a starring role, but I'll try to get you in there somewhere.
That's cool. I want to ask about shooting at the state capitol. How did that come about? Did you just write to the legislature and say, hey, I'm doing this movie, I'm a local filmmaker? Or how did that come about?
a whole lot like that. They have one person in charge of tours and use building usage. And so we found out there's an application. And so we filled out the application. And then we had to meet with him and explain exactly step for step what we would need as far as not only actors and actresses and what rooms we'd use, you know, how much electricity we're going to use, how much lighting we're going to have to use, and all that kind of stuff. And the people were really, you know, it's right in the summertime, right in the middle of tourist season. It's before COVID. But they were really nice, the tourists were. We just asked them, would y'all mind stopping where you are and let us film in this one hallway for 5 or 10 minutes? We'd film and then let them start walking through, and then we'd kind of wait till a lull, and then we'd block all the entranceways and film again, and we actually got it done. And we got some really good shots, and I really like some of them. You know, just being in our state capital is awe-inspiring as it is, but being able to film in there, a lot of the directors and producers are like, how in the world did you able to get to the Capitol? And I was like, all you got to do is ask, you know? You know?
Well, as my mom said, there's two answers, yes or no. That's it.
That's right. The worst they can say is no, you know, or yeah, you can, but it's going to cost a lot of money. But, you know, it didn't cost us anything because we didn't use any big, powerful electricity or, you know, anything like that, or shoot at night where they've got to move stuff around. We tried to use the Capitol as it was. You know, we had to move a few things around just to make it time period, you know, but we were able to get it done and had a blast doing it.
You know, you just mentioned something about time period. I imagine that maybe one of the other big challenges with this movie is making sure that you have all of your props, all of your periphery things, all of those things authentic to the time in which the story takes place.
Boy, that is so true. I tapped into some reenactors that do the weekend gunfights for some mm-hmm. of our extras. So they had a lot of things. A lot of people that we cast were able to come up with that one costume. But we've got a garage full of costumes now, props. We've made every garage sale, flea market, you know, just trying to find, like you said, time period pieces. You know, things that would be able to look good in the background of some of these shots. And you don't want a 1972 oatmeal glass sitting on a bar. You know, doesn't look, you know, people will pick that out. And then you have the people that can pick the guns out. So you got to make sure all the guns are time period. Saddles are time period, which we were able to, you can kind of hide some things. And so we were able to hide some saddles that were not time period, but you don't really see them. So you try to use the camera angles as best you can. But, you know, we have horses and dogs and everything like that involved in the movie. So it is pretty neat trying to get all that stuff together. And in our next movie, we're going to have wagons. And of course, we had wagons in Showdown, too. But the next one's going to be about a wagon train. And so, you know, we can't rent as many wagons as we want. So we're going to have to use a lot of camera angles, we shall say, you know, to make it look like there's lots of wagons.
I'm just curious, where do you get your wagons at? Like, where does one find a place to rent those or borrow those?
Believe it or not, there's people that collect them, and they're always looking for a place to put them, you know, use them in the movies. And when you put a casting call out, you start finding or start calling, and you call museums and see who has them, and they just start popping up a little bit everywhere. You know, you may get two from one person, you may get one, you know, you may have, you know, if we're shooting for 10 wagons, there may be 8 different owners of those 10 wagons or 10 different owners. And, you know, they use them for a variety of things. They may just do it for fun. Or they may do it for parades. They may, you know, whatever. They always look for that big chance to get in the movie. And so, of course, it all costs. You know, they don't come for free. You know? So that's what I say. We can't afford. We'd like 20 or 25 wagons, but, you know, that's going to double cost. So we got to keep that in mind. So I think we can get by with 10 wagons on our wagon train, just use a lot of creative angles and things of that nature to make it look like there's more. Of course, today you have CGI, but, you know, I don't believe in doing a lot of that only to cover up the flaws in another setting or something like that. I'd rather have them actually there. So, it's like a scavenger hunt when you start trying to find some of this stuff, you know.
Well, Bill, you seem to lean towards Westerns. So I'm assuming that you are a big fan of the genre of Westerns.
been watching Westerns ever since I was old enough to watch Lone Ranger. You know, he was one of my heroes as a little kid. You know, and I've got two, I've had as many as 13 horses. They'll eat a lot of food. So, so we're down to two now. We've been in the cow business. We, you know, we're out of that now. We're in the vineyard business. But, you know, yeah, that it's just a part of life for me all this time. And I just love the period pieces, whether, you know, we've got some. Somebody asked us the other day, how many movies do we have on the horizon? I think we counted 12 that we're looking at right now that I've either written, outlined, or have in my mind. And so, and 90% of them are all period pieces, whether they're Westerns, World War II time period pieces, Vietnam, you know, time period, things like that. And like my wife says, I can't do anything easy. She's like, why can't you make a movie with five actors modern day? You know, and I'm like, it just doesn't happen, it seems like. You got to have 100 actors, 500 costumes, you know, things like that. So, you know, and I wrote Showdown on the Brazos in the old John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, Glenn Ford era, where the, you know, the reluctant hero comes in, falls in love, saves the town, walks off with the woman. And so we tried to, you know, tried to mimic that as much as possible.
Well, let's talk about a couple of other experiences you've had in your acting career. You got a chance to appear in the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, of course,
you bet.
Made by the Coen brothers. Did you take away any type of advice or any lessons or anything from that experience of being on set?
You bet. I tried to watch them as much as I could, and they work amazing together. You know, been me and my brother. We'd had three fist fights in one day, you know. those two guys worked great together, and I learned a lot about setting the scene up by them, about getting it all ready, you know, just painting that big picture, and it's okay to change it, you know, because one of them, let's say Ethan would set the scene, would shoot it once, then Joel would come in and change something and would shoot it again, and they never cross words. I mean, they just talk about it and change it. So it's good, you know, change is good as long as it works. Clint Eastwood's one of my role models as far as directing, because he does not believe in shooting it 15 or 20 times, one scene. You know, shoot it three times, four times, right, at a certain angle, then change angles, because you lose your spontaneity if you don't. And I really believe that. But, yeah, the Coen brothers are just amazing to work for.
You also had a role on Fear the Walking Dead. Do you have any cool stories about being on set with that hit television show?
Oh, yeah. It, you know, I love that show. Actually, you know, I started out as one of the vultures, which is supposed to overthrow the main characters. And, you know, that outcome is never good when you try to overthrow the main characters. And so I did get a, you know, about a 5-second shot of just me on TV holding a rifle and, you know, in the gun battle. And that was real neat. But probably one of the funniest stories is we're doing makeup in this parking lot. And as we walk out of the makeup trailer, we look down and we're in a parking lot that's split level. So there's stores. We're at rooftop level with some other stores around us. And we look down and one of them's a daycare center. And these parents are getting their 3 and 4 year old kids out of the car. And here's all these zombies looking down on them. And they're covering the kids' faces and running them into the building and stuff like that. You know, I felt sorry for little kids, but, you know, it was kind of funny.
That's cool. That's cool. You also said, too, if I remember correctly, you had to get completely, totally unmade before you left set, correct? You couldn't
exactly.
Leave any ounce of makeup on you.
That's right. It a lot of times it would take longer to clean up than it did get the makeup on. So you learn that certain shaving creams will... You bathe in that, and you just keep scrubbing and scrubbing and scrubbing, and it will finally come off. But, you know, you got makeup on your hands, on the arms, on your face, and your hair. It's everywhere. And so you just scrub. Luckily, you know, you get in a big parking lot, and you just, whether it's cold or hot, you're out there just scrubbing away, trying to get all this stuff off. Because the last thing they want is somebody driving around Austin looking like a zombie, which is kind of normal for Austin. They really don't want one of the actual walkers being seen like that. So, yeah, you have to get all – and you have to be inspected before you leave. And so that way they know that nobody's getting out with makeup on.
Well, you know, I guess we kind of are working backwards here with my list of questions, because I think probably this should have been the first one I asked. But how did you get into acting?
Well, it was really a fluke. I was sitting at home. I just retired from school business, and it's probably, I retired in January, and it's probably March. And I see an advertisement for an open casting call for a Western called The Sun. Knew nothing about it. I looked up the casting agency, made sure it wasn't a scam of some kind, and applied online. And then I went down to stand in line, too. I thought I'll double shot it. And I stood in line with 1,500 other people. And I thought, man, if I'm really lucky, I'll get a part walking down the street. That's all I want. You know, man, if I can get that, I've reached the top. And lo and behold, I got cast as a featured recurring character extra, which means you do everything the main stars do, except you don't have lines. And so I got to work right beside James Parks, Pierce Brosnan, and really had some really neat scenes in there. And so, you know, it was just a fluke like that. If I had never answered that or looked up that casting call. And what's funny is I sent it to the wrong one. I sent it to the leftovers. And then I was like, oh, stupid me. I retitled The Sun and sent it in. Well, about a week later, they said, you want to be on The Leftovers? So I was like, you bet. So I got to be on the very last day they filmed The Leftovers in Austin. And that was one of those, you're walking down the street and you're just a blurry person in the background. But, it got me, got that little taste in your mouth. And, after The Sun, that was a blast. And there for a while, it was just one after another. Then COVID hit and it really slowed everything down, And I still get a lot of requests to be extras. But right now, my schedule is so busy with just being my own production company, I hadn't been able to do any extra work. But I still love it. I think it's pretty neat. I think everybody that wants to be an actor needs to do that, so that way they understand everything from being an extra to being the star.
That's sound advice. You talked about some upcoming projects, Bill, so let's talk about them. You said you have a variety of them in various different stages. I know that you talked about maybe changing up a little bit the genre, that you have a couple of military projects uh-huh. coming up. So let's talk about them. What projects would you like to highlight real quick?
Well, I just finished I've Got Your Six, and we're in distribution talks with it. And that is a short movie. And, of course, usually shorts don't sell very well, but with COVID, there's not much out there for anybody to see, so they are selling. It just won 9 awards at a film festival out in Arizona. And it's I've applied in several different film festivals with it, but I've got results back on 5 film festivals, and I've made the finals in 4 of them. And so, it's being shown in L.A., it's being shown in Chicago, and, that was a really neat deal. And that's about, the deal about that movie is every actor in it was a military veteran. And I wrote it and directed it, but did not star in it. Really using those military veterans worked out well. We used 80 veterans in that movie, and they were so pleased to be able to have a part in it. Then when we were filming this last time on the showdown, I had to do some pickup parts on my character, and I realized real quick I'd rather be behind the camera and then in front of it. I was like, I want to see that. I want to be back over there. So we're going to really focus on that. I've got the movie we're working on right now is called I Heard the Quail Whistle, and that is a Western. What's a little different is a woman is the hero. My wife challenged me to write it because I'd written several manuscripts with a man as a hero, and she said, make one with a woman the hero. And so you can't turn down a challenge from your wife. So I wrote that, and that one's won a lot of awards and film festivals as far as the screenplay goes. Hopefully we'll start filming that. I think we're going to film it in Santa Fe. We looked at some locations here a couple of weeks ago there. Other things we're working on, now I'm going to use Hallmark, but we have not sold it, but it's a Hallmark-style movie, and it's a Western. And so that's on the horizon. There's a Vietnam-type war movie that I wrote a play to. It's called Wind Is Home, and it is was performed 9 times in a local theater, community theater, and received 9 standing ovations. And I want to take it and expand it into a movie, and it's about a Vietnam POW, and I want to go to the Philippines and film like it's in Vietnam and really build on that one. And then one of my distant cousins he won the Congressional Medal of Honor, and he was killed in action in World War II, and I really want to build that story up and film that one. And then we've got several more Westerns that, we have outlined that we're trying to write. So there's not much time to sleep, that's for sure.
I was going to say, you're a very busy man, Bill, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
They asked me at the award ceremony in Arizona, any advice for new directors. I said, well, sleep is overrated, you know, and when your wife calls you for a meal and you really don't know if it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, you know you've been working a while in your office. So you keep trucking along, because my wife several times has told me it's time to eat, and I really didn't know what it was. I had to look at the clock and say, what time is it? You know, I didn't know if it's 6 in the morning or noon or 5 o'clock at night, you know, because you're just working so hard trying to get things organized, making phone calls till 3 or 4 in the morning, fall asleep at your desk. Wake up, keep rocking and rolling some nights. It's a hectic lifestyle, but it's a lot of fun right now.
Well, Bill, can you tell the listeners where they can find you on the internet so they can keep tabs on all of your projects as they're going on, you know, social media, website, anything like that?
You bet. You know, we have our Facebook page, Bill Foster, and then we've got a Facebook page for Showdown on the Brazos. I've got your 6, and I heard the quail whistle. You can always check out my IMDb page, Bill Foster. And we're working on a webpage right now where we can really show our movies and upcoming projects and also focus on our wine that we're going to be making. That's not out just yet. When we're not working on the movies, we're working on our vineyard. We had our first harvest, so we're going to make about 100 bottles of wine this year. And next year is going to be a lot more than that because they just get more and more every year. So, like I said, we stay plenty busy, so be watching for Quail Whistle Wine and looking for our movies.
Well, Bill, with that, I want to thank you very much for taking some time out of your day to sit down and chat with me. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. I've kind of enjoyed it, sitting here watching my hands out there working. I've been sitting in the truck, you know, drinking a cold drink by the air conditioner. I'm going to have to stay here another 30 minutes, act like I'm talking.
Well, I don't want to be your scapegoat, Bill. So I will let the listeners listeners know that I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Another episode of the PVD Cast in the books, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. And I'd like to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you have any questions or comments about this episode, or any episode for that matter. Well, you could shoot me an email if you like. johnorlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal handle is @pvdmvp. But you can also contact me through the Facebook page and the Instagram feed for the PVDcast. That's simply @PVDcast. And if you'd like to let some folks know where they can hear this great podcast, well, there's a couple avenues for that. The online home of yours truly, PVDcast.com, is probably the best place to go. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting platforms like Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Spotify, etc., etc. Just go to your favorite podcasting platform. In the search bar, put in PVDcast, or sometimes you have to put my name after it, PVDcast John Orlando, and you're sure to find it. And don't forget, you can check out the live broadcast of the PVDcast every single Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page @PVDcast. I enjoy doing the live broadcast. You can join in the conversation with me and listen to the episode. So don't forget, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time @PVDcast on Facebook, and you can join the live broadcast. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we've gone a little bit long, so I'm going to wrap things up. I want to thank you for checking out the episode one more time, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. And as always, stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.